for those of us who spend a bit too much time on the internet and on Twitter, sometimes it's easy to forget that we're in this, like, for ourselves, but we're also in this for each other, and like, we're in this together. That may sound a little cheesy, but it's true. Like, would Bitcoin continue to exist as it is, like, without, you know, us participating? Yeah, like, the code is the code. But it's us as individuals coming together that continues to grow the network and to build on it. And in turn, I think everybody's actually genuinely trying to make each other's lives better and to make the lives of other people that they've never even met and never will meet better. And to me, like, that's why I love doing what I do.
Hello guys, welcome once again to BitCorner Podcast. Actually, welcome to the season finale. So we have made 21 episodes again. This is the end of the second year of the podcast. The third year will start season 5. Thank you to all of you for all the support. We will go even deeper into a lot of topics next season. You will see some little changes, same dynamic. But yeah, we will talk a little bit further. The first two seasons was just to make like a road into Bitcoin. So you have been here since the beginning. We have done a lot of work into the basic of, let's say, Bitcoin 101. I always wanted to, whenever you watch this episode, if it is today or in 10 years, it will provide the same value. So that's one thing, because when we start this project, the podcast, it was also happening the Bitcoin law and everything regarding El Salvador. There's still a lot of grassroots efforts, conferences. We're going to talk a lot about that today, but also in the next season, just because politics or some regulation or whatever stuff say something about El Salvador related to Bitcoin, that doesn't mean that we cannot use Bitcoin. And sometimes I need to remind you that, guys, that Bitcoin doesn't need politics, doesn't need regulation, doesn't need anyone. It's permissionless. So remember, what are we fighting for? So that one thing. So thank you for being here for all these 2 years. We're going to do some crazy stuff in the next season. Anyways, today we're going to start finishing the season 4. And I think the only way to finish the podcast is with, probably for me, and I think I'm a little bit biased for two reasons. And the first one is because the conference that we're going to talk today is adopting Bitcoin in El Salvador. But there's a lot of grassroots efforts happening, and there's a lot of things happening there. We will find out today. And the second reason is because my personal friend, Kiki, is here. So I don't know, it's the second, third time, but welcome, Kiki.
Hi, welcome. It's exciting to be back.
Yeah, I don't even remember. I think it's officially the second one. Then we'll do the all things in Barcelona. It was crazy. Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So it was a great conference as well. The Cypher. It was not a Bitcoin conference. They always tell me it's not a Bitcoin conference. It's a Cypher conference because it was developer master Bitcoin. But it was awesome. So anyways, welcome. How you been since the last time that we see?
I'm good. Thanks for asking. Yeah, that event in Barcelona was one of the highlights of my year for sure. Shout out to the organizers because it was an incredible time, great content, great crowd of people, and a beautiful venue. I feel like a lot of events struggle to find like beautiful venues that are also affordable or in good locations, but they really nailed that one. So shout out to them.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, we struggle finding the venue, but eventually we find a good one, and it was amazing. And I think one thing that people love, I mean, the feedback that we got is that actually, because it wasn't like a big conference per se, we also managed to actually talk with one each other, because, you know, in crazy conference, you don't have the opportunity to do that. And it was very, let's say, grassroots as well. I found out a lot of developers as well. So, and mm-hmm. really cool projects happening. Yeah. Anyways, today we're going to talk a lot about adopting Bitcoin. So, but yeah, I don't know where to start. Probably let's talk about a little bit just about your background. I know that you have been here, but for people that are watching the podcast for the first time, if you can just make a quick resume about you.
Yeah, for sure. So my name is Kiki. I'm originally from Canada. I grew up in the Toronto area. My like professional background before finding Bitcoin is in the restaurant industry and hospitality, restaurants and events. And I really loved what I did for work. And when we got locked down in Toronto in 2020, obviously tumultuous time for everybody for lots of reasons, but it became very, very clear very quickly to me that the industry that I had worked in, that I had trained in, and that I loved was kind of going to change forever. Right. And at the same time, I was kind of just starting my learning journey about Bitcoin and having that time off and away from work, because I am, hate to say it, but I'm a little bit of a workaholic. I always have been. I'm getting better, I swear. But having that time off work with like literally nothing to do allowed me to take the time to learn about Bitcoin. And what that meant for me was kind of actually just learning about money and finances in general before I really like committed to Bitcoin, because I was very much skeptical, unsure, did not feel confident at all in anything around the world of just technology, really, to be honest.
Of course.
And so, yeah, I had the time to go through things and read some books, did some online courses that were more generic, but still, you know, provided the baseline for me to understand what was going on in the world of finances, if you will. And when time came that I could go back to work, even though it was like adjusted work, I took the opportunity as soon as possible, because even though the government was like providing, you know, money for people to live off of, I kind of did a calculation and thought, well, number one, I'm getting bored. And number two, it's not that much of a difference, but there is an amount difference where if I'm working, I can earn more than what they're offering to me. So I can not only cover my expenses, but I can save. And at the time, like I didn't really have any savings. And because I was going through my Bitcoin journey, I started saving in Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And really embraced like the low time preference perspective from at that time. And I started, eventually realized I didn't want to stay in Toronto. I wanted to work online and work remotely and travel. Weird time to choose to travel, but also there were a couple of other factors. And so I ended up in the south of Mexico in Oaxaca for 6 months, which was like a really beautiful experience. But I went into it thinking, because of what I'd seen on Bitcoin Twitter, that there was a bunch of Bitcoiners in Mexico. And maybe that was true, but they weren't in Oaxaca. They were probably in Mexico City or surrounding areas or in the Yucatan, wherever they were. They weren't in Oaxaca, or at least I didn't meet them. And so although it was like a beautiful experience, and for other reasons, it didn't like, I just didn't find community. And then I remember sitting, watching the first year of adopting Bitcoin, watching the live stream when I was supposed to be working at my like apartment in Oaxaca. And I was like, this is really cool and really inspiring. And my partner at the time said, okay, well, our tourist visas are coming up in Mexico. Why don't we go check it out? And when we went, I didn't have any intention at that time. Like, I didn't know that I was like going to fall in love with it or stay there to the extent that I did or anything like that. But definitely went into it with like a very open mind, despite my mother's objections. But the first couple of weeks were definitely an adjustment. I was staying in the city, and it was a little bit different than what I had seen online. But then after those first couple of weeks, we went down to the coast and basically stayed in the El Zante area. And I started getting involved with some of like the local activities that were going on and fell in love with the place very quickly. And I remember my first Lightning transaction and how scary it was. And like the process of like, oh gosh, I'm spending this Bitcoin on like a water bottle that's $1 today, but what's it going to be, you know, in 4 years? But step by step, I got to a point where I was like pretty much on a Bitcoin standard, if not 100%, then 95%. And just through taking opportunities and volunteering and talking to people, I ended up joining the Adopting Bitcoin organization team last year and had a really great time, learned a lot, but realized that this was the perfect opportunity for me to like bridge my two worlds, my background in hospitality, but then also my passion for Bitcoin. So that's how I ended up joining Adopting Bitcoin and being in El Salvador for 3 years. And yeah, here I am. And I feel very blessed that I get to like hang out and meet and chat with people like yourself. And also like that I had the opportunity to experience Bitcoin and Bitcoin adoption in El Salvador at like the most like pivotal time, right?
Absolutely. Actually, you're one of the organizers right now of Adopting Bitcoin. So what a journey.
Yeah, indeed.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk about that of Adopting Bitcoin, because there's a lot of things to talk about today. So this is the place for me where, you know, like global conversation, but also local conversations kind of collide in El Salvador. Mm-hmm. So from your perspective, how was the narrative around the my country, El Salvador, shifted since the first conference in 2001 to today?
Yeah. Well, like I said, I wasn't involved in the first couple of years.
Yeah.
So I can only speak to those as like a kind of an outsider or an attendee. The first one that I attended, if I remember correctly, was in 2022. It was my first Bitcoin event, like conference ever.
Okay.
And so I can speak to those years from a from an attendee perspective, and then joined in 2024 and now organizing. I definitely think that the conference has played a very like big role in helping hand in solidifying the effects of Bitcoin and Bitcoin adoption in El Salvador. And like you said, of like being a dedicated like time and place where conversations both that are locally relevant and that are maybe more international or globally relevant are coming together. One thing that I think is really cool and inspiring, and has been really exciting over the past like week or so for me, is that you can see a linear record of conversations that may have happened 2 years ago that turned into a project that was just getting started last year and is now, you know, applying to speak at Adopting Bitcoin because they're ready to go live, things like this. And I think that that is something to certainly be proud of, and something that people forget about Bitcoin events and specifically conferences these days. Like the market is quite saturated. There's events and conferences around the world. And so I think people are getting a little maybe like ready to focus locally, which is a really good thing. And I'm very much in support of that. But the events like Adopting Bitcoin that are Bitcoin only, that are like laser focused on areas like adoption or grassroots efforts, those are places where you're going to like meet people and have connections that will last you for a very long time, if you like want that out of the experience, whether it's like a personal like relationship connection or like a business one as well. So yeah, I mean, I'm obviously biased, but I've been really lucky to go to a number of events this year in Europe, in Latin America, in the US, and I've had some really great experiences, but I also like cannot wait until November this year to like see everything that we've been working on come together and see some familiar faces and see lots of new faces and just continue like the work that everybody is doing, whether you're just like a pleb who's new or a pleb who's been in the game for a long time and is running a node, or, you know, you have a business, whatever it is, like everybody has something to contribute. And I think they're great opportunities to like learn a lot if you want to, meet a lot of people if you want to. And the benefit of doing it in El Salvador is the weather's gorgeous. So you can also get like a little holiday out of it if you want. So pretty convincing in my perspective.
Yeah, of course. No, and you know, we have been talking before recording, and one thing that I always like to remind people is that I have seen, of course, it's a double-sword thing, because I have seen that now Bitcoin is a lot of into politics and regulations and whatever, which is good. For example, Bitcoin treasuries and whatsoever, especially in the US, because the US makes a lot of noise. So we need that kind of media thing right now, because it's now, for example, I have met a couple of new people during this summer, and I have talked about Bitcoin. Now, before, I remember a few years ago, it was like, what is that? What are you talking about? But now if you talk about Bitcoin, they actually know what you're talking about. And they can even some kind of difference between shitcoins and Bitcoin. So that's good. But in the other way, it's like I have seen, especially in our space now, that we are deep into this rabbit hole, that sometimes we forget that we are actually building. We are early. We're trying to do some stuff that doesn't need permission for governments and whatsoever. So there are kind of conferences that I have seen that they're surrounded with shitcoins just because they're trying to expose what they're doing in the next Web3 blah, blah, that it's, I think some conversation that I think still are happening. I mean, like that's, I know it's bullshit. So yeah, but when you go to grassroots efforts and Bitcoin developers and actually changes in, I have just seen a few of them. Of course, I'm a little bit biased, but I also have seen what your guys are having in the conference. And I just can tell from a very few conference right now that I have seen that actually like keep giving the space to builders, developers to show what they're actually doing to, because again, mm-hmm. we're too early. So I think we still need to continue doing that. And also I want to ask you about, because I have seen how adopting Bitcoin have grown. I have seen that it also is not just in El Salvador, it happened. Well, let's talk about El Salvador, but I have seen that it happened in other countries around the world. But you have brought in speakers like from Africa, Europe, Asia. So I want to ask you about the themes, the topics that keep coming up when these communities share their struggles, or what are they building together? Is there like a universal pattern of, I don't know, resistance against what's going on right now in the world? What have you seen?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's very interesting to witness some of those conversations, which sometimes take place on stage, like in a panel, and sometimes take place at a booth, and sometimes like take place when two people are getting coffee and they start chatting. You know what I mean?
Of course.
But in terms of like what are common challenges or struggles, I mean, there's a couple of things, right? Like one of them is regulatory. So I agree with you when it comes to, you know, the political nature of things. That's not necessarily my personal inclination. I'm not necessarily going to like go to an event because there's a politician speaking, but that's like me and my personal world of interests and focuses. But at the same time, there's a valid case to be made that discussions about regulation are really, really, really important. And they're important when we talk about adoption and hyper-Bitcoinization. Do I think that, you know, everybody should follow every single rule 100%? To each their own. You do you. I respect your choice. But the fact of the matter is, like, when we're bringing on new people into Bitcoin, it is something that comes up a lot. Like, it's still a conversation I have with my parents all the time, even though I've been doing this, talking about this for years now. It's like, oh, well, what about the government? What about taxes? What about how do I, you know, do this and make sure that it's like proper, right? Mm-hmm. And so it doesn't matter if you come from like an affluent country or an affluent background or a developing country or, you know, like a more humble background. This is still something that like people who are learning about Bitcoin are thinking about. So that's one thing for sure. Obviously, the regulations and compliance changes from place to place.
Mm-hmm.
Like that it is what it is. You know, we are all individual people trying to make a change and a difference. The fact of the matter is this is a part of it, right? So there's that. And then there's also like just the financial literacy and education basis, whether it's there or not as well. And I would argue in most places, it's not. Like I'm from Canada, a place that is supposed to have fantastic education. But I know for myself that financial literacy was like not something that was ever taught. Like I actually don't know a single person who feels like they were educated and empowered on financial literacy from like a young age, or at least from like a kind of state perspective, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the times it's like, okay, we need to step back and like teach the financial literacy aspect before we even get into introducing Bitcoin, so that people have, you know, the base layer to work off of. So they feel like they actually understand what's going on, and then they can take that information and be empowered by it, if that makes sense. So yeah, those would be two aspects I think that come up a lot.
Okay, perfect. And what are the macro topics that you want to highlight on stage this specific year? Now, there's a lot of things that
Yeah. Yeah. Well, like, we want to facilitate these conversations to happen and to happen openly, whether they're coming from like a more kind of social effort or they're coming from like a more technically minded effort. So we take like the Bitcoin only avenue very seriously, and we take adoption very seriously. So when we're going through submissions or speaking to people, it's like, okay, how is this relevant to adoption worldwide, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what that means, like if I were to give kind of a view on some of the topics, circular economies is going to be a really big theme this year, and grassroots educational efforts that are happening around the world. There's definitely going to be some discussion on regulations and compliance and that kind of thing. There's going to be some very technical stuff. To be honest, some of it goes above my head as well. Some very technical stuff for people who are more inclined towards the technical aspects and coming at things from like a developer's perspective. Gosh, what else? We have programming for Bitcoin para Niños, which is like our kids or youth area as well. And people who are just talking about things that they've built, products that they've built, services that they offer, but from the perspective of how does this accelerate Bitcoin adoption? What are the challenges that we've faced in our product or service or even in our country? And how can we work together to get past that?
Absolutely. Also, I want to ask you on the ground in El Salvador, because there's a huge topic, but I need to ask because you're also part of my first Bitcoin. So Who is building? Like, that's a question that people ask, like, there's still things happening in El Salvador. Do you really see real infrastructure, devs, wallet, education, keeping up with the headlines?
El Salvador is where Bitcoin lives in the wild. Street vendors stacking sats, bit devs coding late nights, and merchants proving sound money works. Adoption here isn't top down, it's bottom up, powered by the network effect.
Everything is good here. Bitcoin is money. Bitcoin fixes everything.
Adopting Bitcoin 2025 is where that energy comes together. Two main stages, a Spanish track, hands-on workshops, a creator stage, hacker lounge, even a lightning poker tourney. Add in a Bitcoin World Fair and a VIP lounge. This is where Bitcoin adoption meets reality. Be there. Build Bitcoin's future.
Cuando dejas tus activos digitales en un exchange o en custodia de alguien más, te expones a riesgos de terceros no deseados. A diferencia del sistema bancario tradicional, Bitcoin te permite tomar el control total de tus fondos utilizando tus propias claves privadas. Esto te permite ser soberano y esencialmente tu propio banco. Al tomar el control de tus Bitcoins, puedes evitar riesgos innecesarios de terceros. Almacenar tus Bitcoins en custodia de terceros como los exchanges puede exponerte a ataques de actores malintencionados, gobiernos o estafadores que lo único que quieren es apoderarse de tu dinero. Las billeteras de hardware aumentan la seguridad de tu billetera porque tus claves privadas se almacenan en un dispositivo especializado que no está siempre conectado al internet. Como te he dicho antes, mantener tus claves almacenadas en un dispositivo en línea puede exponerte a factores adicionales de ataque, por lo que se recomienda usar una billetera de hardware al almacenar grandes cantidades de Bitcoin durante largos periodos de tiempo. Jade es una billetera de hardware no custodial para Bitcoins y Liquid que ofrece opciones de firma simple y firmas múltiples. Yo personalmente lo utilizo para almacenar mis Bitcoins, ya que me siento mucho más seguro manteniendo mis Bitcoins en una billetera fría que en una almacenada, por ejemplo, en mi teléfono. Si estás pensando en adquirir uno para ti, no olvides utilizar el código de descuento de nuestro show, BitCornerPodcast. De esta forma estarás apoyando directamente el show y además obtendrás un 10% de descuento para la compra de tu billetera free. I don't know.
Yeah. It's a question I get frequently as well. I mean, the thing is, the reality of the situation is it's not just like one specific area or area of interest that is building or that is focused. There's growth in all areas. And I can say this after conversations with friends and colleagues of mine who work in different areas. So for example, there's a ton of grassroots education that's still going on, whether it's publicly provided or whether it's like privately provided. There is a ton of circular economies that are popping up. And although they may be small, because that's how these things start, I don't think people realize the efforts that are happening outside of the beach area or outside of the city. There's tons of activity in Ruta de las Flores, in the various towns in Ruta de las Flores, in Santa Ana, in San Miguel, in La Peraya, in Suchitoto, in Chalchuapa. Like, it's not just what you see on Twitter. And I think that that's a really powerful and amazing thing. And I hope that we're able to showcase that a little bit more this year than we have in previous years regarding some of the very important grassroots work that's going on. And also I want to add, that's not just grassroots work by, like, you know, foreigners coming in and wanting to share this, like, amazing technology that they found. But this is, like, this is Salvadoran people who have learned about Bitcoin and put in the work, and they want to share it with their communities, and they want to empower their communities. Like, this is like true bottom up adoption. Unfortunately, I think a lot of people see the headlines, see the tweets, see the videos, and they think that everything in El Salvador is top down, but that's just simply not the case. And it shouldn't take you that long being there to understand that. But that being said, there's still kind of top down or institutional level, you know, stuff that's going on that's contributing to adoption in the country and is setting, you know, the stage for adoption worldwide. Like, there was the new announcement about the Bitcoin banks. I can't claim to know too many details on this. Like, I don't have any more information than the average person on Bitcoin Twitter.
Absolutely.
But just, like, the thought that this is something that is going to be happening, I don't know, again, how it's going to roll out. But the idea that these are the conversations that are happening at an institutional and, like, a government level, like, you can think what you want about the government or government in general, but the fact that these conversations are happening is still something to, like, be, you know, recognized and celebrated to a certain extent. Because yes, there is politicians and institutions in the US and a couple of other countries, and there's some mining happening in some really interesting countries, and probably a lot of things that I don't know about and a lot of regular, even Bitcoiners, don't know about, but it's true that El Salvador is and continues to build. I don't see an argument that that is not happening, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. But I also wanted to highlight that is because the IMF deal happened, right? So, mm-hmm. And a lot of noise games about that. So that's why I always, when I had the opportunity to have someone that is living in El Salvador, that I have been working on it, I want to contrast that, or that have just visited El Salvador, that tell me, like, okay, what have you seen? What have you experienced? Because you have been living there or traveled there, so you are the eyes, and don't trust what the media say. Do with your own eyes that, right? So. Yeah. For me,
and
it's
I'll put an asterisk there and say, like, it's not all sunshine and rainbows, obviously. Like,
no,
I've had troubles with certain, you know, products or certain services, or, you know, there was one time that I was trying to pay, like, this, like, small government fee in Bitcoin, and they had a sign that said they accept Bitcoin, but then they couldn't accept it that day or whatever it was, you know, like,
mm-hmm.
It's not to say that everything is perfect and all of that. I will not say that, because that's not necessarily mm-hmm. the case. But mm-hmm. the important thing is that the base layer is there, the growth continues, regardless of what's happening as outside or external factors, if that makes sense. And I agree with you. I think it's really important that people, like, understand and hear that, because there's a lot of stuff out there on Twitter from a lot of different perspectives.
Yeah.
But the reality is that there's, like, real people, local people, who are embracing Bitcoin, learning about Bitcoin, and continue to, like, you know, build, essentially.
Yeah, of course. For me, it was like, all right, so because I agree with you that it has to be from the down to the top. So for me, it's like the merchants no longer are forced to accept Bitcoin because a law says, like, Chivo wallet is shutting down for me. Actually, if you ask me, it's a relief, because that thing, it was kind of KYC. Well, it was KYC. I didn't like it. There's a lot of wallets that are great, guys. So you can use whatever you want in El Salvador. But I never saw it actually as a setback. It was more for me like, you know, like a chance for grassroots adoptions to actually breathe without, you know, the government scaffolding, so whatever. So mm-hmm. I have seen that now they can breathe and do whatever as they started. I mean, Bitcoin Beach, they started without the permissionless anyone, and whatever they want to do in whatever place you want to do, you don't need the permission of anyone. So that's the beauty of Bitcoin, right? So for me, it was like, all right, nothing changed. Now we were going to see actually if it is because of the government or because there are actually some efforts happening. And yeah, they never stop. So I'm glad that you highlight also the good and the bad, because that's why we actually want to know.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Absolutely.
And talking about that, so what do you see in this conference as the real, let's say, engine of adoption? It's like the, I don't know, the developer, the infrastructure, something cultural of, or the needs that depends on any country, because you say that you're going to have a lot of people from different sizes, parts of the world into the conference.
Is the question about, what are the outcomes? What motivates people to adopt Bitcoin?
Yeah, and work into Bitcoin as well.
I mean, I'd love to say that it's like all 110%, you know, for the revolution, but I think we'd all be lying to ourselves if that was true. There's certainly a number go up aspect to it, and I don't think that's a bad thing. Like, it's to ignore that is just silly, in my opinion. Do I want to focus entirely on that? No, but it is an aspect that draws people into the space and also motivates people to continue to build. And I think denying that or ignoring that is just silly, in my opinion.
Yeah, of course.
But at the same time, it's like, I actually saw a really good tweet or post on some platform, one of the many platforms that are out there, from Pierre Corbin from Pay with Flash. Okay. And it basically was about how a lot of Bitcoin adoption is also psychological. And the best example of that is when you see someone like pay a Lightning invoice or like buy something with Bitcoin for the first time, and like to witness that experience in the way that like 9 times out of 10, their face lights up and they're like, oh, that was cool. How important the process that is. And I think that is true. So people may come in or may be interested for the number go up, or, you know, there are people who come into it because they're like genuinely interested in the technology and the cryptography and that sort of thing. But yeah, that human experience that we get from it, from whether it's like buying Bitcoin, spending Bitcoin, talking about Bitcoin, teaching about Bitcoin, learning about Bitcoin. It's like that human experience, I think, that like ultimately, you know, keeps this train moving forward. And sometimes, again, for those of us who spend a bit too much time on the internet and on Twitter, sometimes it's easy to forget that we're in this like for ourselves, but we're also in this for each other, and like we're in this together. That may sound a little cheesy, but it's true. Like, would Bitcoin continue to exist as it is, like without us participating? Yeah, like the code is the code, but it's us as individuals coming together that continues to grow the network and to build on it. And in turn, I think everybody's actually genuinely trying to make each other's lives better. And to make the lives of other people that they've never even met and never will meet better. And to me, like, that's why I love doing what I do. And that's why I think that in-person events are really, really important, because you actually get to like connect in real life and have those conversations and those experiences that like you're just not going to get on the internet in the same way. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, absolutely. No, I'm thinking, no, because I was thinking, because you're uniting like a lot of countries and cultures and whatever. So there's also something that you're going to do different this year, and there's also you're going to incorporate more content in Spanish, right? Because I think last year it was like, because I haven't been there yet, but I have sent my parents every single year. And my dad told me that before you had like to have the
the translation.
But now, if you're looking this into the internet, you're going to do something else, right?
Yeah, exactly. So we've always provided headsets and live translations for people from English to Spanish. Mm-hmm. And our content in Spanish has grown every year. I don't have exact numbers, but if I were to guess, last year, probably between all of the talks and all of the workshops, 35 to 40% was in Spanish, maybe. But this year we have committed to 50% of our content being English and 50% being Spanish. So basically we have two stages, an English and a Spanish stage, and two workshop halls, English and Spanish again, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And this also reflects like the attendee growth and diversity over the years as well. Like last year we reached about 50% of our attendees were Salvadorans as well, which is incredible. And I hope that we hit at least 50%, if not more, this year. And that doesn't even count in the fact that there are plenty of Spanish speakers who are coming from other countries to come to this event and to experience Bitcoin in El Salvador. And so this is like a natural reflection of that. And in my conversations with people from Spanish-speaking countries around the world, what I have kind of like seen or heard is that there is a growing amount of Spanish educational content, whether it's like beginning level or more advanced or technical, but there still isn't nowhere, there isn't anywhere as much in Spanish as there is in English. And if we get to play a part in providing more tools and a stage and a platform for that Spanish content to thrive, like, that is an honor for us, in my opinion. So yeah, we're excited to be bringing in a number of international speakers and of course local speakers and workshop providers as well. But yeah, 50% Spanish content is going to be awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. And always pushing about that. And not this podcast, I mean, we're speaking in English, but it has Spanish subtitles, but whatever you can do to close the gap between languages, for me, it's amazing. And also saw that it's a reflection as well that Spanish content is growing. That means that more Spanish speakers countries are also using Bitcoin or starting to learn about Bitcoin. Not because at first, I also think that the first one to adopt it or start using it, of course, were the ones that were struggling a lot, like with hyperinflation,
right?
Let's say Argentina, for example. So El Salvador, because of the Bitcoin or whatever, and also because all the grassroots effort that happened. But also I have seen in Colombia there's growing a lot, so little by little it's spreading the word and changing. But yeah, I agree that we need more Spanish content, so I'm happy that it's finally happened. That like 50 and 50, that's a huge number. People don't see that, but actually just to have even, it's great. It's awesome. So I'm glad that you're doing it. And yeah, before I continue, we're in the middle, kind of almost ending as well, but right in the middle of the podcast. So you know what's coming. So guys, for the last time of this season, we had two games. The one is the usual, that is my previous guest have a question for my next guest. And in the case of Kiki, because it's season finale, so yeah, you will have to think in a very special question for the next season. And so let's do that. So my last guest was Halston Valencia. I don't know if you know her. If not, I'm going to introduce you. You know her? Okay, cool. So
I've seen her on Twitter.
Okay, cool. Yeah, she's talk a lot. She works with Adam O'Brien and Bitcoin Well. So yeah, we record a great episode. So she has a question for you.
Okay, my question is, if you had to give a young person from Gen Z one piece of advice, it could be Bitcoin related or not, what would it be?
Well, I have to preface this by saying, I kind of am Gen Z.
No, you're not.
Like, I'm like right on the cusp, okay? I call myself a zillennial.
She's lying, guys.
I'm not. It depends on when the cusp is. Like, different institutions use different years. And I won't say my birth year, but I am. Well, it's not that hard to find out, but I am on the cusp. But I just, like, I need to put on my Gen Z hat for a second, you know? If I had to give a piece of advice to someone from Gen Z, at all. Sorry, was it any generic advice at all?
I think, yeah.
Or Bitcoin related. Generic advice. Okay.
Yeah, no, Bitcoin related.
Well, I mean, I guess this kind of applies to Bitcoin and a Bitcoin journey as well, but I guess my piece of advice would be like, just...
You can take your time.
Take the time to understand yourself and give yourself an opportunity to really understand yourself and try new things and figure out what works for you and what doesn't and what you like and what doesn't, and try your best not to let like too many people influence what that might be, and then be true to it. Because I think in this age of the internet, it's very easy to take on other people's opinions or other people's ways of expressing, or whether that's like art or fashion or the content you consume or whatever it is. We're inundated with information and opinions all the time, and it can be very, very overwhelming to be able to like center in and figure out like what actually you want and what works for you, as opposed to like what may work for people around you, kind of thing. So yeah, take the time to like develop a relationship with yourself and figure out what you want out of life, and like go after it, because life's too short and the opportunities are endless. It's like, yes, the world is a little bit crazy, but also like there's so much beautiful technology, people, experiences out there, but you have to like develop like a good like ground and baseline in order to be able to be open to those experiences and ultimately like have a fulfilling life. So yeah, do you, boo.
All right. That's a very millennial advice. Thank you very much. Just messing with you. that's the kind of advice I would give. So yeah.
Yeah.
No, just kidding. No, it's a good advice. Thank you, Kiki.
Yeah.
The question will be, your question will be at the end. So yeah.
Okay.
Now, continuing with your own advice. Now that you know you know your past, so is the time that you can compete with your actual self. If you want to beat you, you have the alphabet. Yeah.
Yeah.
You have the alphabet game. By the way, we're talking about the alphabet game, guys. So yeah, Kiki has been doing it. Actually, you made it, but you made it in Barcelona. So you can actually have the proper opportunity to do it in the podcast. So yeah, we will share the score by the end. And actually, today you are going to be the one to determine who's going to be the final score. So you can beat your own self or even the top one, top two, top three. So. It's on you. A lot of pressure.
Right. I have to wait until the end to see the leaderboard, right?
You want to? That's on you. I can share it right now, or I can share it in the end. So that's.
I want some fuel.
All right. Yeah, you told me that you're very comfortable. Okay, I can give you.
Who are the top three, and do I know them?
I just remind the top one because people say, "Damn, this guy is crazy." I have it here. So in the first place is Jordi. But look at you, you're in the fourth position, so you're kind of good.
Wait. Oh! Okay, I was reading this. Okay, I'm sorry. No, I was Jordi reading is this the opposite first way. Okay.
No. Jordi is the first Jordi. Place.
Damn, yeah. Okay.
Then Adam and Cole from Koinos. Yeah. So it's just Jordi from Sat Atlantis, Adam and Cole from both, actually. You can tell that they are developers from Koinos. Then it's you. And then it comes Rick and Theo and Grafton. So yeah.
So you're looks saying like that the top, out of the top five, there's three Canadians.
One, yeah, true. I don't, yeah, true. All right.
Go team.
Good observation. Yeah.
Okay, I think I'm ready. I'm coming for you, Jordi.
All right. You need to share it in the end because we don't trust, we verify. You need to share your best scores. You know how it works? Do you remember? Do you need to type?
I forget. Should I share my screen now?
Oh, if you want to, yeah, you can do this as well. It's more fun to actually do it.
Okay.
You can share just one tab, so yeah, it's okay.
That's what I'm going to do.
So yeah, while you're doing that, I'm going to explain. So yeah, you press, when you start to pressing A, don't type anything. When you press A, you start the counting, and you need to follow. You don't need to screw it. You need to be, even if you continue, the time will continue if you screw it. So yeah, and don't press enter in the end, otherwise you will reset. That's not okay. The only rules, and you have three shots, no more. So
okay, good hold luck. On, I'm scared. Okay, I'm gonna take all three. Ready? Can you count me down?
Okay, yeah. 3, 2, 1. Go! Look.
I give up now. I think I went too fast. That's what happened.
Yeah,
definitely.
Keep going.
Yikes.
You have two more.
Okay.
But be aware of also the... So it's not that easy, you see?
Okay. Not as good as my last one. I've also switched between two keyboards today, so that's my excuse.
No. Both.
Okay,
bullshit.
Ready? Last one. Oh no, I've already messed it up.
Okay. It's like,
No. I'll practice.
7 points, yeah. Next time we'll do it live with all of you guys, and we'll bet some sats.
That would be fun. I'm down for that.
Yeah, like a jackpot.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe we can get Francis from Chain Duel to implement lightning on this game or something.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk with him.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's a good game. All right, so the past Kiki is better than the future. No, just kidding. So anyways, we will remain your best course. Nothing will change. So you still are in the top five. So that's a good thing. But good observation that just Canadians, wow, I love Canadians, except Jordi, he's Catalan. Yeah. But okay, cool. I need to put some Salvadorians here. There's no Salvadorians here now that I'm seeing this. Oscar, Pupusas, I'm gonna call you, man. Yeah, he's a great developer.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so we're gonna start wrapping up. I'm gonna make you probably 2-3 more questions about this because I want people actually to know the value of adopting Bitcoin to going to conferences, not just because it's happening on Salvador. It actually helps a lot to do these things. So one of the things that I actually want to also that you can share is that, all right, what is actually gonna happen if I go to El Salvador in adopting Bitcoin?
Mm-hmm.
What can I expect?
Yeah. So we have a pretty exciting program happening this year. So as I mentioned, we've got the 50% English and Spanish content. You can expect that in the forms of like talks and presentations, panels. Some of those panels will be kind of more open-ended, and some of them will be more kind of like opposing views, if that makes sense, where there's a couple people on either side of an opinion or an argument and people can discuss. And then we'll also have workshops that'll be a little bit more hands-on, a little bit more intimate. We also have our Bitcoin para Niños area, so like the children and youth programming. We're really excited to be working with Bitcoin Juniors Club again, as well as My First Bitcoin is helping us put together some of the content for that. So that's also going to be in English and Spanish, and it's going to be, you know, content specifically for young people, but then it's also going to have some discussions on like family themes, whether it's like homeschooling or travel with your family or whatever it is from the lens of Bitcoin. We also have our authors corner again. So we will have, I believe we've got about 10 authors who will be doing kind of like a fireside chat about some of the work that they've produced and signing some books, selling some books, Q&A opportunities, that sort of thing. What else? We have a really fantastic kind of like expo hall called the Network Hall this year. So you can expect booths from companies from El Salvador, from companies from the US and international companies as well. But we're also highlighting a number of like educational and adoption effort projects as well. So that includes our Circular Economy World's Fair. So the concept there is kind of based off of the idea of the World's Fair that's been happening all around the world for quite a long time, where places showcase, you know, their food, their culture, their technology, their architecture, but from the lens of like a circular economy. So we're actually excited to be bringing in some circular economies from Europe. We've got tons from Latin America. One or two are coming from the US. We're hoping that one or two will be able to come from Africa. And so people can actually go and speak with some of these circular economies, ask questions. They can, you know, collaborate and network amongst themselves as well. What else? We've got the Noster Lounge, which I'm excited to have again this year. And I think they'll be doing some fun things and also just like a great space to hang out and learn about Noster.
Yeah, Tanya told me a little bit about that, so it's going to be exciting.
It's going to be really cool. My First Bitcoin has a lounge as well for Bitcoin educators. We've got La Cruzada, Cruzada 21, and Bantuno LATAM coming as well. That's from kind of spearheaded by Agustin from La Cripta in Argentina.
Yeah.
So we've got a lot of stuff going on in that main hall. We'll also be showing a number of videos, short films, videos that are talking about other circular economies that weren't able to join us in person, but still wanted to share what they're working on and how their grassroots efforts are going. And then, of course, we have the Bitcoin Farmers Market and then our food and beverage vendors. Everything that we do also is Bitcoin, Bitcoin only. So if you come as an attendee, the vendors will be accepting Bitcoin. That's how you'll pay for, you know, your beer, your pizza, whatever it is. That is how things will be done. And outside of the actual 2 days of the event, we also have like a ton of events that are happening around the same time and satellite events that are really exciting. So there's the Reclaiming Health and Longevity Summit happening. I believe that's November 11th and 12th. That one is a little bit more geared towards, like, of course, as the name says, health and longevity. It's not necessarily entirely about Bitcoin, but it is being run by a couple of Bitcoiner friends of mine who are super awesome, and I'm sure that they will have some really incredible content if health and wellness is, you know, one of your topics of interest. There's also Bitcoin Historico that the Bitcoin office is putting on. I believe, if I remember correctly, that's November 12th and 13th. And they have a ton of really incredible speakers that are coming. So definitely, if you're in town, recommend checking it out. And it's a great opportunity to see the kind of like revived historical center as well. My First Bitcoin is doing the charity dinner, as well as the unconference. Unconference is on the 13th. They do have a maximum number of tickets. I believe it's 150, and I know that they're selling out pretty quickly from what I heard. So if you're an educator or interested in working in Bitcoin education, that's a great place to learn all about that area. And then we have the main days of our conference. Generally, we will head down to El Zante for the Sunday and hang out at Bitcoin Beach. I'm sure that they have plenty of fun activities planned as well. And then the following weekend is Economia Bitcoin in Berlin, Usulutan, which is a little bit smaller, but I know that they have some awesome speakers lined up and a great opportunity to see this like small community that's really embraced Bitcoin. They've got over 150 merchants accepting Bitcoin, and see it for your own eyes and maybe take a break from the heat of the beach.
And, of course.
Get to know people who are working on Bitcoin as like medium of exchange. And that, all of that doesn't even include, you know, the after parties that are currently being planned or the pop-up bar that's happening the week prior, which I can't share details on yet, but stay tuned.
Okay.
Yeah, there's no shortage of events. There's going to be lots of opportunities to hang out with people, chat with people, network, and enjoy everything that El Salvador has to offer, really. And also, if you're coming and you have the time, I would encourage you to get beyond the, the city and the beach and go check out places like Ruta de las Flores. Mm-hmm. Or go hike a volcano, or go to the beautiful Suchitoto, or Lago Coatepeque, or whatever it is. Even if it's just one day, take one day and get out and like see the beautiful like countryside of El Salvador, because it is a wonderful experience. Just a stunning country, really.
Yeah, actually, I want to ask you two things. Well, the first one, now that you're talking about Ruta de las Flores and Suchitoto and whatever, those are personal things that I actually love. Even Coatepeque, my family's from there. But what are some of the differences you have seen in the last year as far as developments or things that are happening, not Bitcoin related, but in El Salvador in general?
I mean, I think the biggest, most obvious one is just like infrastructure improvements everywhere. I remember when I first got to El Salvador, like driving around even in San Salvador, in the capital city, driving around, and there would be like pothole covers missing on potholes, right? And that's just like not as much of a thing anymore. Maybe there still is, but it's not nearly as much as it used to be. Roads everywhere are being improved. Visibility is being improved. Town squares are being kind of like cleaned up and revived. New trees being planted. And then there's also a lot of like just like construction and maybe you could call it like real estate development happening as well. Everything is just kind of leveling up bit by bit, place by place, which also helps to improve the quality of life for locals. Like sometimes people look at it and they think, oh, this is all for foreigners, this is all for tourists. But from my understanding and my experience, this also can help elevate the quality of life for locals as well. So it's kind of a win-win.
Of course, absolutely. The other thing that I want to ask you was related to my first Bitcoin, my primer Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you can share some updates just in general.
Yeah. So for context, I'm on the board of directors of my first Bitcoin. I joined them in January of this year, and it's been really inspiring, to be honest, to be a part of an organization that's working so hard on grassroots efforts and education, like worldwide. And I don't know timelines on things, so it's hard to say what I can share.
All right, so this is going to be released next week.
Okay.
For the first time, guys, the timeline, it's accurate. And I can tell you the last person that had been in the podcast and when, so you can have like a mental timeline of the latest updates. So, and now, and then you can think what you can share. Publicly,
yeah.
At least.
Yeah. What I can say is that
Reina Chica, was here two months ago. That's the
Cool. There's a lot of really inspiring and exciting movement happening for the organization, opportunities around the world to continue the work in providing open source education surrounding financial literacy and Bitcoin and freedom ultimately. And honestly, it's like, joining the team made me realize that there's so much more work that organization is doing than even is able to be comprehended through like an individual conversation or even through following Twitter. And I can give a very concrete example of that in that about 2 weeks ago, I was introduced to somebody having a casual conversation and both Bitcoiners on the context of Bitcoin, but my first Bitcoin got brought up and this person said to me, "No way, I've actually been teaching the diploma for my first Bitcoin in my community for a couple of years now." And I said, "Where do you live? What are you doing?" And I don't want to dox the person, but they are teaching Bitcoin in a very like contentious country. They have translated the entire diploma to their country's native language. And we know of lots of translations, but that solidified in my head that there's like plenty more that we probably don't know about. There's people in, you know, really interesting and at times like, you know, challenging environments that are taking this open source education and spreading it around the world. And so what I can say is that you can certainly expect to see more nodes popping up within the My First Bitcoin community, and that the efforts for the kind of global education will continue and grow, and the nuance of the kind of products, if you will, even though it's open source, like the products that we offer will continue to grow too. I know that there will be announcements at the conference, so if you want to learn more, come to Adopting Bitcoin.
Okay, no, that's cool. That's fair also as well.
Yeah.
That's why that conference is May. And that also leads me to my last question, that what do you really hope to achieve in this conference this year?
What do we hope to achieve in this conference this year?
Yeah.
That's a great question.
Like the goal.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the ultimate goal of the conference is to, I guess I've kind of said it already, but provide a space and a platform for people to connect and to have in-depth discussions and have those discussions become something to build off of in the future. And that may be in the world of circular economies. That may be in developing an app or a product or a service. That may be in, you know, understanding compliance and regulation better and maybe taking that back to your local community. Ultimately, the goal, I suppose, would be to inspire people and to equip them with more knowledge and to help them spread their own networks so that the Bitcoin community as a whole can benefit from it.
Absolutely. Actually, that's one thing that I also want to encourage to everyone that is watching it and or listening to the podcast, is that keep building, because in the end, if you think about it, this is another system. So we need everything that we have in our current system, but with another alternative that is Bitcoin. So if you actually want to build something, you have to have your own business. You have plenty of space to do it in Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. Literally anything that you can think, you can do it on Bitcoin. And we need those alternatives, actually. We need to. We have the tool right now. So if you want to build, just do it. Or if you want to support anything that anything cool that you like, just do it, but do it on the Bitcoin space, because yeah, we will have this alternative. And in the end, that's the ultimate goal, right? People will say, all right, do you want to go to Austrian economics? Because in the end, it's economics, so that, or Keynesian economics. You can choose whatever is good and fits in your life. So yeah. Anything that you want to add that probably I didn't ask before we close in, before we wrap it up?
I don't think so. I think I have talked about the conference a lot and hopefully given people better understanding of like what to expect and why conferences in general, not just adopting Bitcoin, but in general are really valuable. Yeah, I guess just like stay humble, stack sats, but also spend them if you feel so inclined and, you know, be kind to each other. I don't know.
That's so cool. But yeah, all right, Kiki, thank you very much for being the podcast. It's always a pleasure. Guys, this is the end of the season. Right now, I'm currently planning already season 5. Expect more things. I can already tell that I'm going to be as nice as I have been in 2 years. We need to discuss some stuff. Bitcoin related, we need to go back again to our roots, so we need to remind what are we fighting for. So that will be, let's say, the focus of season 5. Yeah, just please remind, why are we here? Don't get into the noise and politics regulation. Remember why we were here since the beginning. Keep building, and what Kiki says, stack sat but also spend it. That's the only way that we can continue doing this wonderful job in Bitcoin. That's it. I don't know when we're gonna see us again, but probably in a few weeks. So go to El Salvador, go to Adopting Bitcoin. But yeah, we'll catch up soon. Kiki, thank you. Guys.